Welcome back to the next episode of Back to Birding, everybody. This is Luke Thompson. We don't have any Patrick today because we were, well, I'm with David Holly again. And so we were talking Lesser Antilles, and then we realized we had gotten to like 1.5 islands in an hour and like 5 minutes. And so this is actually the same day, and Patrick had to leave to do homework, you know, school or whatever. My strategy is just to not do the homework and then figure it out later.
That is a strategy.
Anyways, we're going to be continuing to talk about David's Lesser Antilles trip from this summer. So to recap, what's the basic interest stuff that we've covered already?
Yeah, so we've talked about Martinique and we've talked about most of Dominica, but I think if we want to recap like the overall stuff, we've been talking about a lot of the cool island endemism that is throughout these islands. That like each island, yes, they share some cool things. Like all the islands have banana quits, but I don't know, if we get a banana split, then they may not all have the same banana quit. Which that is honestly, if that ever happens, I'm going to be so pumped just so I can say banana split in a serious context.
By the way, we didn't even talk about banana quit at all.
But yeah, like the islands share stuff. There's a lot of birds that are common amongst them, but like they each have their own little spice. Like whether it's a warbler or a parrot or hummingbirds, it's really, really cool, really, really special. Low quantity of species down there, but really, really high quality, and has the potential to offer like a lot of really magical experiences.
Yeah. For me. So what we said at the end of the last episode is basically you saw 111 species that are currently countable. So probably something like 120-ish. That will in the future be hopefully 120, but that's something like in a morning in Colombia or Ecuador or Peru, you could get less than
an hour. You can easily get that.
But you spent your month that you had off between med school to go to Lesser Antilles and see all these very unique, very cool birds.
So. Yeah. And like the thing is I've experienced both worlds because like I've been to Ecuador and like, you know, gotten 400-500 species in 2 weeks,
which is incredible.
It's beautiful. It's amazing to do that. Like it's a wonderful, exhilarating experience. But I spent like twice the time in the Lesser Antilles and got, you know, a quarter of the species. But honestly, this is either my favorite trip that I've ever done or top two. See, the problem is I don't know if it counts as a trip because I spent 6 months in Australia.
Okay,
that is probably like my next, like that would be the competing thing because they have farrier wrens. And even though they're not troglodytes wrens, they're not troglodytidae the family, they're honorary wrens in my mind.
Do they act like wrens?
Yeah, they're very feisty. And that's, to me, that is an honorary wren. Like,
so you know, like chickadees and stuff.
Yeah. Too? Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Because they're
like,
feisty.
Yeah. Exactly. If I'm giving like the fairy wrens the honorary wren title, then I pretty much have to give like kinglets and chickadees and titmice and all those.
Sparrows.
Yeah. Some sparrows.
I was out in the cattail marsh at Baylor yesterday, and I just like pished, and like 15 sparrows would come in.
Yeah. No. It's honestly that's the big thing. But what's even more important, like the what gives the fairy wrens like the extra honorary wren-ness is they hold up their tail like a wren does.
Yeah.
And to me, that just like that adds to it. I love small little round birds that hold up their tail. Like it's just extra special.
And the fairy wrens are just stunning.
Oh yes. Fantastic.
Okay. How did we get to Australia already though?
Oh, we were talking, cause I was talking about the fact that yes, I only saw 111 species in almost 30 days. It's 4 weeks. Yeah, it still is like probably one of my, it is either the favorite or amongst the top two or three favorites trips that I've ever done. And I think only like is 30 some species were lifers, so like that you know, that it's not about the numbers for me, it's the experience of it, like just experiencing these really cool small island endemics. It's just super special to me.
I mean, and I love that honestly, because I think that, you know, I think I've talked about this in other episodes too. I think we are too list obsessed. I think that detracts from the experience so much. And, you know, I'm guilty of it. You know, I think we all are guilty of it to an extent where we're always looking for that next, you know, tick on the list. And I'm really trying to take myself away from that, because it really, I think some of the best moments in birding are, you could even be like with a common species, you know, like yesterday I got great experience with swamp sparrow. You know, I've seen thousands of swamp sparrows, but you know, I was like, this is really sick to see, you know, you make a noise and 15 swamp sparrows fly at you, you know?
Right. That's what it's about. Because if we're too focused on like the number of ticks or even just ticks in general, the longevity of the joy that birding brings you is limited to the amount of time and money that you have to be able to travel somewhere to get that new bird.
100%.
And so by focusing on like transferring the focus onto something else, it allows you to like keep that joy, that spark alive, even just in, you know, in the cattail marsh with the swamp sparrows. Like that's what it's about.
And I think another thing is like the longevity of the joy that you're feeling in the moment too. Yeah. Like, 'cause I think once you tick a bird, it's barely even joy sometimes. Sometimes it's relief. If you're thinking, like I did a county big year a couple years back and it was like relief instead of excitement a lot of the times. And, you know, and then you just feel down after missing a bird sometimes. Yep. I think. And, you know, if you're like take away from that and like you just try and appreciate everything, I think, and not do it for the list, I think it really helps make birding a more enjoyable experience.
100%. Yeah. So, here we are talking philosophy of birds.
I love it, man. I love it. This is some of my favorite stuff to talk about. It's hard to get this point across to birders sometimes. Mm-hmm. But like I talk about this type of stuff with some of friends of mine. Like I have a friend who's really into diving and we talk about this stuff a lot. My friend and mentor, Ben Holt, who's the salamander guy, we talk about this a lot. Like, I think so. He kind of doesn't like birders, and I think that's a big part of why. Because you know, he doesn't love the obsessive chasing after stuff type thing. And you know, I think because I've been around those people for 3 years, I've been like, wow, you know, I see exactly where you're coming from. You know?
Yeah, yeah. And like on that topic too, with like if we're trying to circle back to the trip here, like I definitely took way longer than needed to be to cover these islands because I specifically wanted to have like an extra day or two to just not have any target birds, to not have that focus of like, oh, I need to see a target bird.
Yeah.
I literally, most of these islands, I had an extra day or two where I just like, oh, what did I enjoy most while I was out there? Let's go back and do some more of that.
Yeah.
And that honestly makes a huge difference in how the trip feels. Because it's not just like target relief, target relief, target relief. It's just like you actually get to experience the island. And like and even when, because I knew I had that flexibility, I didn't necessarily have like that target relief mindset. Mm-hmm. Whereas like I knew I was like, okay, even if I don't see it today, it's like I have plenty of time. So I'm just going to like try to enjoy, oh, there's a euphonia over here posing really well. I'm going to spend 30 minutes with it, even though I still have target birds that I need to see.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. I love that.
If you can do that, absolutely do that. Not everybody can do that. Thankfully for me, since I had the summer off from school and because things are very cheap down there, like I did things very, very cheaply, I had that flexibility to do that.
Yeah. Okay. On the topic of how cheap it was, how much, like if you don't mind me asking, how much was like the whole trip?
From travel, rental cars, the gas, the lodging was around $3,500 for me,
which
for 28 days,
which is really
good. All things considered, like you can do that more cheaply in Central America. However, considering all of the transfers between, I'm having to transfer eight different times because I went to 9 islands, ferries, planes. That includes, by the way, that total includes flights to and from the U.S. as well.
Wow.
So all in all, like it was relatively cheaply done.
I mean, and that's like a month. And that's pretty
with a ton of transfer. Because obviously, if you went to say like Costa Rica and spent a month there, but you didn't have to like transfer countries, which is what I was doing every time I went to a new island, is that you're just literally going to a new country, but you just were able to like use the public transport. Because I've done that in Costa Rica, where you hop in a bus and it's like $5 to go several hours on the bus.
And
you can do stuff super cheaply. But considering that I've had an island hop, like
that's pretty good, for sure.
And everything was Airbnb as well. Like there, I looked for hostels, I looked for hotels, I looked for all the options for lodging. And Airbnb was hands down the cheapest way to do it. And it was really cool because I got to talk to some really cool people.
And I think that's also a pretty cool experience from travel is, you know, you get to talk to the locals, you know?
Yeah, it's beautiful. Like I had a really, on one of my bonus days in Martinique, which we didn't even talk about, because I had talked to my Airbnb hosts, they weren't birders, but they were like big like hikers. They loved to experience the natural aspects of Martinique. They told me about this really cool hike that I could do.
Really?
And so I did, it was like a 15 kilometer hike and they set it up. There was no cell signal there, but they set it up for me. They're so cool. They were amazing people. they called one of their, because I didn't speak French, but they called one of their people that they had worked with before that has a boat that would pick you up at the other end. And so like we had a preset time that I go meet them on the beach. They pick me on the boat and drive me back. Cause it, it was a long hike. It was several hours. It was like a 4 or 5 hour hike. Cause it was rough terrain and rainy and stuff. But yeah, instead of having to do it a 2-way hike, I got to experience much more of the length of that trail. It's essentially like Martinique's version of the Appalachian Trail, which is, you know, which Martinique is a tiny, tiny island, but like, that's what it was like. You got to experience a lot of the island, and then the boat ride back was beautiful. And I would never have experienced that, A, if I didn't have the extra time programmed into my trip, and B, if I wasn't in an Airbnb where they told me like, hey, this is a beautiful hike and a beautiful boat ride back. You should do this. And they set it up for me because I would not have been able to set it. Cause there's no, it's not like you can go online and be like, oh, boat that will pick you up after this hike. No, that's not, it's literally just word of mouth.
Yeah.
And since they had done it before.
And then making those connections. Yeah. That's
awesome. And also like he told me that my Airbnb host, he was like, yeah, I mean, this is Martinique. We're an island. Like he'll probably pick you up there at that time. But if he's not there at that time, wait a little bit. If he just doesn't pick you up, because that's a possibility, because, hey, we're on the island, he may have had something else to do and forgot, then just, like, walk an hour to the nearest town. He showed me where to go, where there would be cell service, and I could call him, and he said, I'll come pick you up, which is just, it's just really cool.
Like, and, like, it seems like they're so willing to help me.
Absolutely, because if he had to do that, it would have been, like, an hour and 15-minute drive for him to come pick me up. But he was, like, he was totally down to do that if it happened.
That's awesome. So, I love that.
Yeah.
I'm sure sometimes on birding trips, people miss out on the that sort of connection. I feel like that's something that can easily happen. And I think that's, and I could easily see myself doing that. And I think it's something to keep in mind is just like make connections with the locals, talk to the locals.
100%. You know? Yeah. Actually, like at one of the, I guess we haven't talked about St. Lucia, but we did talk about the St. Lucia Thrasher, the white-breasted thrasher. When I walked out, so this is like on St. Lucia, they're much more difficult on St. Lucia than they are in Martinique. There's like one primary spot where pretty much all birders go to see them there.
It's called the white-breasted thrasher spot, right?
Yeah, that's literally the eBird hotspot is called white-breasted thrasher spot. It's a random spot on the side of the highway. But on the side of the highway, there's like a gravel pull-off, and there was this fruit stand set up, and there were people selling fruit. And when I walked out, after seeing the thrasher, there's this guy called me. His name was David. He called me over. He's like, hey, man. So I go over and start talking to him. And he's like, what are you doing back there? And I was surprised because I'm like, oh, this is like an eBird hotspot. I assume that people would know by this point because it's been there for years that, you know. But no, he had never talked to anybody. He has a fruit stand there all the time. He had never talked to anybody, or nobody had ever talked to him, I guess, about what they're doing. There are groups of birders that go there quite frequently. And so I talked to him for a few minutes. I was like, yeah, there's this really cool bird. I showed him pictures of it. And he's like, oh, cool, man. Yeah. We ended up having quite a conversation because he was showing me all his tattoos and stuff. And like, he had tattoo David. I was like, oh, that's a good name. He's like, yeah, that's my name. He's like, hey, that's my name too. So like, we just had that little bonding moment over that. And like, I hope now that he knows that like that bird, there's a cool bird back there that like, if he sees people going back there, then like, hopefully he'll be able to talk to people out there. I was like, hey, did you see the thrasher back there?
Yeah.
But
and that could help him get business too.
Yeah, right? For real.
And I think that's also a thing is like, you should try and support the local economy when you're going somewhere.
100%. I was buying like, all that cost, the cost that I gave you didn't include food because basically food was such a negligible cost that I didn't even like calculate it in because I basically lived on bread, nuts and fruit. And there was so much amazing fruit from the local vendors that I just walk through in the street and stuff and get like bananas and mangoes and stuff like that. And it's just like, I lived on that.
I lost
a ton of weight, but it was great. I felt energized. Like.
So did you like bring bread and nuts or did you buy it there?
So you're not allowed to bring stuff like nuts. But I did bring a lot of, like, I brought a lot of like flatbread.
Yeah.
You can pack a ton of that because it's very small. It doesn't take up a lot of room. I know I got a bunch of like peanut butter and stuff in the stores because it's relatively cheap compared to other things. And then a bunch of bananas bananas and bread was like kind of the staple. Then if there were other fruits, depending on where I was, the different islands had different things that were going on in the fruit stands. But yeah,
some people are probably like listening to this like, what is wrong with David?
Oh no, man. Like if I can cut corners like that, I will cut corners when it comes to cost.
Yeah.
And like food is one of those things like I'm a weird, like my friends call it the snake meal where like when I'm birding, honestly, sometimes when I'm not birding, but like if I'm traveling and birding, oftentimes what I do is I am out birding all day. I don't eat anything. I don't even notice it. And then I get back, you know, like 3 or 4 in the afternoon. I'm like, oh, I'm starving. And then I eat like one giant meal and then I wake up and repeat the same thing.
Do you eat breakfast at least?
No.
Wow.
Very, very rarely. Because really? I just like get up and go. I'm just not hungry. We haven't even talked about anything else in the islands. Before we leave Dominica, I did want to talk about forest thrush there.
Okay, yeah.
Because this was another surprise. This is another reason that I love the Lesser Antilles so much, is because I had a lot of surprises along the way. Mm-hmm, where, mm-hmm. like, I feel like when I've gone to, like, Costa Rica or Ecuador, I guess those are super, super birded countries, though. I've never been, like, truly surprised or shocked by, like, oh, I didn't expect that or I didn't know that. So, like, the first one was with the Martinique white-tailed nightjar, where just, like, I heard it, but I didn't think it was a bird because it sounded nothing like the mainland birds.
Yeah.
Well, with the forest thrush, this isn't one that I had seen. There were only a few photos on eBird of the Dominica forest thrushes, and I noticed, like, they are extremely white-bellied. Like, they looked very different than the birds on Guadeloupe or Montserrat. And so I kind of knew, I was like, okay, like, that is a distinct subspecies. Mm-hmm. What I wasn't prepared for, once again, was the sound. I get to the location where I was hoping to see the forest thrush, step out of the car, and, like, I hear a thrush. Like, it's the forest thrushes are tortoise thrushes.
So that's like American robin.
Right. Yeah. The same genus as American robin. And so, because I had seen already at that point several tortoise thrushes, both in Central and South America, as well as in the islands, like, spectacle thrush is a tortoise thrush.
Yeah. Yeah.
In last episode, vibes kept on coming up. Tortoise thrushes have a certain vibe that even if you had never listened to any other recording of any other tortoise thrush species, if you have extensive experience with our American robin here in the United States, there's a certain vibe to their song and to their calls that you'll kind of recognize, like, ah, that's a cousin of the robin.
Yeah, so there's, like, some, I can't remember this exact species, there's some, like, species of tortoise thrush that's, like, endemic to one island in the middle of nowhere in the Pacific.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and I, like, listened to the audio of it, and I was like, that sounds almost exactly like a robin.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Like, the call note, like, that high-pitched call note that mm-hmm. they do, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, where, they're like, see?
Yeah, like, yeah. That was so similar. And I remember when I was seeing, like, clay-colored thrushes, they had a similar note like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
So, when I got to this place with the, that was decent for the forest thrush, they were somewhat irregularly seen there, but that was I realized that was the case for pretty much all the species there, with a rare exception, just because it's so underbirded.
Mm-hmm.
And I step out of the car and immediately hear a tortoise thrush, and I was like, oh, but that's not the forest thrush, because the recordings I had listened to, because there were none from Dominica, were from Guadeloupe and Montserrat.
Mm-hmm.
And so I step out, I was like, okay, yeah, that's definitely a thrush, but it's not, it's not quite like spectacle thrush, because that's a very common bird in several of the islands there. Mm-hmm. But I was like, it's close enough to spectacle thrush that that's probably what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so I start walking in there, and I get closer to the bird, and it was really hard to see. The forest thrush are really, really skulky. But as I'm looking for it, all of a sudden I hear this really hard smack. Like a smack call. It's kind of like a really harsh brown thrasher or fox sparrow, which is not what, like, American robins do nothing like this.
Yeah. I didn't even know any tortoise thrush did anything like that. Yeah,
forest thrush do that. And I heard that smack, I was like, oh, that's a forest thrush, because it's a very distinct call note that they do. That's nothing like American robin.
Mm-hmm.
Or spectacle thrush. Spectacle thrush have, like, little chuckle calls, kind of like American robin.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, oh my goodness, that's a forest thrush. And I was like, okay, maybe that's just a weird individual. But I eventually saw that bird, extremely white-bellied, and I was like, this is a spectacular-looking bird. Because they're pretty much all brown on their upper parts, but on their belly, they're clean white. And then once you start getting up towards the chest, it's like the white feathers have brown edges that gives it, like, a fish scale look all over the chest. It's beautiful. Honestly, one of the top tortoise thrushes, in my opinion.
Really?
Yeah, and so I kept on walking that trail and came across several others doing this same exact song. And so then I got recordings of them, because I'm like, this is very distinct from the Guadeloupe and Montserrat birds. And not only visually, but their songs are so different. And I actually got a recording of a forest thrush doing, like, a minute long solo of just, like, mimicking other birds, like, really, really well.
A forest thrush?
Yes. Like, really? Like doing mimics better than Northern Mockingbird. Like, because I was listening to the recording today, and at first I was like, oh, I forgot to edit this recording, because it starts out and I was like, oh, that's a Caribbean Alania. Normally I cut out stuff if it's like 10 seconds of other birds before it gets to the main bird that I submitted before. It's like, oh, I forgot to edit this. And then I was like, wait a second. And it moved on to something else. And I was like, oh no, this is the mimic recording. I'd forgotten about the mimic recording, where it did, like, these beautiful mimics, imitations of other local species. I don't think that's unique to the Dominican forest thrush, but I think it is, you know, something that forest thrushes do.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Just really, really cool.
Do you know which? Oh, there it is. I found it.
That's Caribbean Alania.
This sounds like a mockingbird.
Yeah. but better. Like usually mockingbirds, like I can tell, like there's a certain quality to it that it's not a perfect mimic. Like every now and then they'll do some things that are pretty spot on, but like it was doing really spot on stuff.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And so like it got me really excited because this is something that like I had no idea that they sounded so different from the other subspecies.
And then it's mimicking. Like
yeah. Yeah. The mimicking, I'm sure that the others do that as well. It just hasn't been documented as far as I could find on eBird or Xenocanto. But it was just really cool that the song itself sounded so different. They look different. I'm like, this is probably a split waiting to happen. Like, again, it's one of those situations that if these two subspecies were on the mainland U.S., they would have been split decades ago.
Yeah.
It's just because they haven't done a lot of research, I'm assuming. Because that's not even a subspecies for eBird. Like, you know how eBird will have...
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I just looked at the pictures. There's so much white on the Dominica birds.
Whereas Guadalupe Montserrat, the scaling that I was talking about, goes all the way down almost to their vent.
Yeah, that's wild. Wow. Yeah.
So I was really, really excited that I had planned time to go see that. Because I was basically going to see that location on my way back to the ferry dock to leave that morning. I didn't realize just how different they were, because I was like, oh, they're really, really easy on Guadalupe, so I wasn't that stressed about it. I was like, you know, I have plenty of time there. I'd kick, it's way out of the way, but I was like, I'm gonna kick myself if I don't go to this location. At least try.
And then they're different. Amazing.
Yeah, because I initially, when I was there for like the first 20 minutes, I kept on hearing this bird deep in the forest, because they're very skulky. Didn't like to come out, and I was like, oh, it's probably just a weird spectacle thrush. But yeah, sure enough, it's just a weird subspecies, I guess, of forest thrush.
I love that. So that was Dominica, and then after Dominica, where did you
Guadalupe should be much shorter, because this is the one where I truly I only had one day there, and that was planned, because the only true endemic they have there is Guadalupe woodpecker.
It's strikingly similar to a Lewis's woodpecker in some ways, right?
Yeah, no, and vibe as well, because they are very large and crow-like. Like because Lewis's woodpecker, that's oftentimes the impression that I get when I see them flying, especially is like, oh, it's like a crow. And that's kind of how these guys were too. Large, all dark woodpecker.
Yeah.
With this beautiful maroon purple sheen on their chest. Oof. It's just, oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they're, endemic to Guadalupe. It's really the only true endemic that they have there. I would have liked to have more time there, but you know, I had to pick and choose where I wanted to spend
more time. You only had so many days, because
I did have a limited amount of time. But yeah, so Guadalupe, there's one national park that you can go to that has Guadalupe woodpeckers, bridal quail dove. They're on other islands, but Guadalupe is like by far the easiest. They were literally walking around in the parking lot when I pulled up at sunrise. And just very tame, because there's this cool, this is when I wish I spoke more French, because as we were talking about like talking to local people and just hearing their perspective on things, there was this really cool lady there that fed the birds at this at the entrance of this trail. She set up like a little souvenir type shop thing, because it's a place where the tourists go big time. Guadalupe is definitely more touristy than Dominica, not at all touristy. But I tried to talk to her, and she tried to talk to me. She was telling me about some of the cool birds that she sees. And like when I was photographing the quail dove, she told me, she was telling me, oh, there's the bird wine throat. And she was trying to describe to me, she's pointing out a purple throated carib, which has a beautiful purple throat that was, right behind her. And I got to photograph that. She was so excited to share that with me. It was really cool.
That's awesome.
But like, I wish I had the tools, language skills to speak to her, because she feeds the birds. She has, I don't know what she was feeding them. I couldn't really tell. It was like, I think it was like bread that she crumbled up, and she was tossing out to the lesser Antillean bullfinches and the bridal quail doves and the brown tremblers and pearly eyed thrashers. And they would,
what is a brown trembler?
Brown trembler. Oh yeah. So tremblers, there are two species of tremblers, both in the lesser Antilles, brown trembler and gray trembler. And they are a species of thrasher.
Oh really?
Wow. Yeah. They're mimics, and they're called tremblers because, they frequently take their wings and kind of quiver them almost. It reminded me of like a fledgling bird. You know, fledglings will like quiver their wings when they're begging. That's what they habitually do that as they're zipping around. So like you can see them from a distance fly up to a tree, not even have to lift your bins, and just see that quivering wings. It's like, oh, that's a trembler.
That's weird. That's interesting. I wonder what that behavior is from.
I'm not sure.
I guess this is like one of those weird things that happens with islands. Are there like more weird behaviors like that?
I don't know. You know, I've never really thought about that. Because I feel like it's weird to us because we don't have anything that's like that here, but there's all sorts of behaviors that might be considered weird. That, like, I don't know, with a trembler, because, like, I don't know if it has anything to do with You know how mockingbirds will like flick out their wings and then pull them back? And there's all sorts of hypotheses about what they're doing with that. If that's like to maybe try to flush up insects as they're zipping around on the ground.
Yeah.
Or what that is, what's going on. But it almost seems like it could be related to that.
Yeah.
Because it's a similar type of thing, except instead of like holding them out and keeping them stable like mockingbirds do, they quiver them.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. I don't know. That's interesting.
But I mean, they are related to mockingbirds in the same family. So I don't know if it's common with that or if it's completely its own thing. These birds like clearly had a relationship with this lady because they were so tame with her, but not with me.
That's awesome.
It was really cool. Like I did get to photograph some of them because once I hung out with her long enough, then they kind of like warmed up to it. But for a while there, it was like, you know, anytime I would approach, like, nope, they're gone. But like they would literally be feeding right at her feet. And she did this every morning. It was really cool.
That I love that.
Wow. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. And that was pretty much cool. Oh, and then the forest thrush in Guadeloupe. When I heard them there, I was like, okay, this sounds exactly like what I was expecting them to sound like.
Mm-hmm.
And it really reinforces like, okay, yeah, this is a very different bird than the birds on Dominica.
Wow.
So yeah.
Nice.
And then that's Guadeloupe. That one, I think there's a lot more that you can do there non-bird wise. But for me, because of the way that the ferry schedule worked out, like I had that one day
and that was enough.
Day. Yeah. I had one full day cause I came in after dark and had a full day and then left first thing in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And of all the islands for that to happen to with the ferry schedule, that was the one to have.
And it's funny cause that's the largest island, right?
It is. It's the largest island as far as land area goes.
I wonder why largest island, only one endemic. That's
yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I know there's a lot more development there cause the population is much bigger there.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the French territories. It's much more modern, compared to the other islands.
Yeah. Maybe that's it.
I mean, it could be a lot of other random things as well. It could be just random geographical stuff. It could be random past weather events. Cause like, you know, a single weather event can completely wipe out populations of birds as we've seen with other islands. I don't really know the details of the biogeography of Guadeloupe, but I will say it's one endemic is a high quality bird. Like
yeah, that is
Guadeloupe woodpecker.
Woodpeckers are such a cool group of birds.
Yeah. I had a lot of fun with those guys because it was like really the only special thing that I wasn't going to get to see again. I got to really focus on them. And I spent several hours with them on this one trail and just, had a juvenile bird, which is really cool.
That's amazing. Wow.
Yep.
And then after Guadeloupe, there we go. Where did you head off to?
Took an 8-hour ferry.
Did you see any birds on there?
No. So interestingly enough, on the shorter ferry rides, I saw cool birds, but this one, I was out there for almost the entire 8 hours and saw almost nothing. I saw a few random like sooty terns and I think I saw great shearwater at one point.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I talked to some cool people. That was fun. Like, a lot of you, because I'm out there with my giant camera and binoculars and
people dressed. Are like, what are you doing?
Yeah, because most people were like there for going back. Martinique and Guadeloupe are by far the most visited by tourists because of because they're French territory, so a lot of European tourists come because no passport is required because they're French, so they're part of the European Union technically. So they can travel freely between those two islands. I talked to a lot of, and I think a lot of people assume that I spoke French because I look like a white dude in
a French colony.
So. Yeah, exactly. So they come up and start talking French, and like the one phrase that I did learn is "je ne parle français" or something like that, where I don't speak French. And so then they, you know, start, thankfully, because the European school system generally does better with second languages than the American school system.
Yeah.
Most people did speak English to some degree. And so we were able to communicate some, but I got lots of questions like, oh, what are you doing with the camera? I'm like, oh, looking for birds. And that, you know, led to some cool discussions.
That's cool.
Yeah. Cause that was a long ferry ride. Cause all the others, I'd hopped, it was 2 hours, 2 hours between the other islands. And then I'd went from the far northern ferry island to the far southern ferry island. And
just like, that makes sense, right?
Yeah, well, because that's how it worked out with the schedules. Because I started out in Martinique, and so went from the third most island to the second northernmost island to the first northernmost island back to the fourth. Which in the previous episode, if nobody had listened to that, there's four islands that are connected by ferry: Guadeloupe, Dominica, Martinique, and Saint Lucia. The others are not regularly serviced by a ferry, and you have to connect with them by flights, or if you charter a boat, I guess. So after a long 8-hour ferry ride, which I was hoping would be a mini pelagic, and it definitely was not a mini pelagic, ended up in St. Lucia that evening. And St. Lucia and St. Vincent have the most endemics of any of the other islands. But most of them are very, very easy. So my parents were scheduled to come in the next day. Their flight got canceled. They ended up not being able to come in until the next morning, or next, I guess it was early afternoon. So I had one morning by myself. And so I'm like, I'm going to try to like sweep these birds as much as possible so that my parents don't have to deal with, you know, too much bird stuff. My parents love being outside. They love hiking and stuff, but I wanted to like minimize that as much as possible so that we could just enjoy our time together without having to think too much about the birds, and was able to get all but the nightjar in just a matter of like 3 or 4 hours. Wow. Which is great. St. Lucia birds are wonderful because they have their own pee, which will be split, because it used to be split and for some reason it got relumped. I don't quite understand why. But the Lesser Antillean peewee is probably going to go the way of the euphonia, where there's going to be Puerto Rican peewee, Lesser Antillean peewee, and then St. Lucia peewee. So Lesser Antillean peewee would be like on Guadeloupe, Dominica, Martinique. And then St. Lucia is very distinct from the others. And so it will likely have its own thing. But yeah, all the birds on St. Lucia are relatively easy, except for the Rufous Nightjar. But St. Lucia wren, which is the thing that inspired the whole entire trip, not quite as easy as Dominica wren. But if you go to the right places, they can be pretty easy. Like Anse Chastanet there's like a resort down there, but the road to it is like public. At least I think it is. Tons of people bird it, so I ended up walking.
You treated it.
There's like 3 or 4 different resorts down there, so it's not like one resort owns the road. It's like it's a common access point to these resorts, which I definitely did not stay at. way too expensive. But walking this road is fantastic for almost all the endemics in St. Lucia, except white-breasted thrasher and the Rufous Nightjar are the only two endemics that you have to like make specific trips for on St. Lucia. But the St. Lucia wren is absolutely delightful. It's a thrasher build, like gigantic long decurved bill, white belly, like nothing like a house wren, but it is currently classified as one. But St. Lucia wren was the highlight.
The anger is building within David.
Oh, right now. Yes. you get me talking about wrens and people not giving them the love they deserve, and I will get very angry really quickly.
Yeah.
But St. Lucia peewees are awesome. They make these cute little peep song. Our peewees here in the U.S. Have like a song and a call. Like, you know, the Eastern Wood peewee, like you can make like, okay, that's a song and that's a call. St. Lucia peewee, from what I can gather, they're all the recordings I can find, and they're even labeled as a song. It's just like a simple beep, beep. That's it.
Wow.
It sounds like a call note to me. It sounds kind of like, you know how like olive-sided flycatcher, which is a peewee, does like a pip, pip, pip.
Yeah.
It's like that, except double instead of triple. Huh. It sounds very similar to that. And apparently that's functions as their song, I guess. I don't know.
That's interesting.
Whereas the Lesser Antillean peewee and Puerto Rican peewee, all of these are currently classified as Lesser Antillean peewee. But their song is like, it's like a trilled, rolling whistle, which sounds a little bit more like a song to me. In addition to having call notes.
Yeah. Wow.
But yeah. Lesser or St.
Lucia. So very different.
Yeah. And they visually, they look very different as well.
Yeah.
The St. Lucia peewee, especially.
Cool little things. And they have like a hint of orange, right?
Yeah. Especially St. Lucia peewee.
Really?
Yeah. St. Lucia peewee, like their entire belly is like orangey, rufousy colored.
Cool.
Yeah. Wow. Whereas Lesser Antillean peewee, not as distinct. Like the contrast between the underparts and upper parts are not very distinct, like not as sharp. But like St. Lucia peewee, it's a very sharp distinction between its underparts being very orangey and the upper parts being more brown.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wow.
And yeah. St. Lucia warbler, which we had referenced previously in the first episode. Very common there. Very beautiful birds. This is my mom's favorite bird.
That's awesome.
Because they're very, like, when we think of warblers, a lot of warbler species high up in the trees. Well, for the most part in St. Lucia, there aren't very many tall trees. And so these warblers are oftentimes down at eye level. They're very friendly. Amazing. Like, everywhere we went, it wasn't just like in highly populated areas, but like even in the middle of nowhere, they're very friendly birds. They just have like no concept of fear so they'd literally be chasing insects like right at our feet. Super, super fun bird.
That's incredible.
We can jump to the other interesting bird would be like St. Lucia parrot. They have their own parrot. And Rufous Nightjar, the St. Lucia subspecies.
So, and they're probably a different? Or
I don't know. Vocally, I don't hear much difference when I listen from recordings from like Brazil and listen to the recordings there. But the interesting, that's the weird thing for me. That's why I don't think there's been enough research into the white-tailed nightjar. Because white-tailed nightjar, vocally was completely different, but yeah, there was no Martinique distinction for eBird. It's just white-tailed nightjar. But there is a Rufus subspecies distinction that you can submit on eBird. Despite, like, I don't think there's much, to my ear, there's not much vocal difference. Yeah, when I look at it on the spectrogram, it doesn't look that different.
Yeah.
I'm sure maybe with a statistical analysis, there might be some different, because the one note thing that I did notice was, like, the introductory note. But as I listened to more and more recordings in Brazil, it didn't seem consistent.
Yeah.
There was a lot of overlap with what I heard in St. Lucia, so it's like, who knows? But, yeah, so now we can move on to the weird wren in St. Vincent. So from there, we took a flight to St. Vincent, from St. Lucia to St. Vincent.
It left on time.
That was the one flight of the entire Caribbean experience that left on time.
Wow.
And didn't get canceled. That's not only did it leave on time, it didn't get canceled. That's the other three got canceled. It's not like they got delayed. They got canceled. but yeah, so we left on time. It's like, oh, wow. So all these things that I heard about the Caribbean Airways is like, oh, it's perfectly fine. They were just overreacting, and it's a negative bias that, you know, they only leave a review when it's bad. Well, uh-huh. I'm actually thankful because that was the only time my parents flew inter-Caribbean uh-huh. with me. And so that experience was great. We didn't have to deal with that because, you know, if I'm by myself, I can deal with whatever and it's annoying. But like when I have other people that I'm like,
yeah, it's frustrating.
It's very frustrating. So I was very thankful for that. We left on time, got to St. Vincent, and yeah, in St. Vincent, I was listening to a bird, you know, in the distance, and I was like, oh, that sounds like a weird warbler. The one warbler that is unique to St. Vincent is the whistling warbler.
Which is an incredible bird.
It's a crazy incredible bird. It has nothing like the St. Lucia warbler or anything like that, because it's a completely different genus. Honestly, if I had been the discoverer of that bird, I would not have recognized it as a wood warbler.
Yeah.
I would have been like, what is this weird wren, this tuxedo wren warbler thing? Like, it's clearly not a troglodytes wren or anything like that, but it holds its tail cocked up like a wren.
It doesn't look like remind me of anything that I'm familiar with.
Yeah, no, it's black and white. Like it almost reminds me of stuff that more I think of when I think of like Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
Rather than here, but somehow we have this weird little warbler thing here that the adults look like they're wearing tuxedos. Really, really cool. Very, very, very skulky. But the cool thing about St. Vincent is all of the endemics can be seen in one national park. And so went up there and enjoyed views of, you know, dozens of St. Vincent parrots, which are very unique Amazonas parrots. Like they're like, it's hard to describe, like they're very bronzy on their back. But when they fly, they truly look like a rainbow. And like their colors is very like pastel. It's like a color scheme that I'm not used to on parrots.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause normally parrots are pretty aggressive with their color.
You know? Yeah, it's exactly. Like green, red, blue, like nice, clear primary colors.
Yeah,
but these guys is like very pastel. It's really beautiful.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and whistling warblers are by far the most difficult bird on St. Vincent, because they are incredibly skulky, like more skulky than a lot of tropical wrens that I've run across. Like they almost remind me of a tapaculo, but an arboreal tapaculo.
Yeah.
I don't know if there are arboreal tapaculos or not. All the tapaculos I've experienced are like ground dwelling, sneaky little, they act like mice, essentially, where they're like zipping around.
Mouse of the trees is what a whistling warbler is.
Yeah, that's right? Essentially what it is. They're incredibly skulky. Excuse me. And just, they were very, very, very difficult to photograph. The first time I was there, I got a brief glimpse of one. And I was like, I'm pretty sure there's a juvenile. I got blurry out of focus photos, but you could see the tail cocked up.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I went back the second time, I was like more prepared because I didn't realize how skulky they were going to be. So I was like really prepared. I was like, okay, he's going to give me like a brief appearance probably, because usually I'll hear him and then like it comes up and I'll hear it again and it comes up and then it zips across and that's it. And so I was able to like nab some photos, and it turns out like they're the only photos at the time. I don't know if they still are, of juvenile whistling warbler on eBird.
Wow.
Which I was, at first I was like a little bit sad. I was like, oh, I didn't get to see an adult. But at the same time, I was like, okay, there aren't good photos of juveniles out there.
Did you ever see an adult? Or?
No, I didn't. Yeah. Or I think I might have, on the first time, I might have gotten a brief glimpse of one with the juvenile.
Mm-hmm.
But I never got a good look at one. So St. Vincent, this is one, we were talking about locals at the beginning of this. Okay, so St. Vincent has some great offshore snorkeling that you can literally swim to. Wow. So I love snorkeling. St. Lucia does as well. Got to experience a little bit of that on St. Lucia. But on St. Vincent, some wonderful, wonderful snorkeling there, especially if you're willing to free dive, because it's a little bit, the reefs are a little bit deeper than most people like for snorkeling, but I love free diving. So it worked out perfectly for me because there's beautiful fish down there. And it's also this site to snorkel at is the site of where the first Pirates of the Caribbean was filmed. The introductory scene of Jack Sparrow coming in, it was filmed there. The cool thing is there's a dude that lives on the beach there. Like, when I say he lives on the beach, I literally mean it's not like he has a house on the beach. He literally has like a tree house, but I wouldn't even call it a house, a tree platform. Mm-hmm. That he lives and sleeps on. And he's lived there for decades. I think he said he was like 42, I think, at the time I was
there. That's a cool life.
Yeah, his name is Kenny. So
that story...
if anybody goes to St. Vincent, please, please, please go to this place. I think it was... what was it called? I forget what it was called.
I'm sure it's easily Googleable because it's the famous, right?
Yes, exactly. At this point, it's a very dilapidated tourist... What some people would call like a tourist trap, because it used to be back... Because Pirates of the Caribbean was early 2000s. Mm-hmm. And so back then, it was a very popular place for tourists to go. And you could see, like, when I went there, it was like, yes, you could see, like, these old, super faded photos and boards for Pirates of the Caribbean tour spot. Mm-hmm. Very few people go there anymore. Mm-hmm. But I went there because it was good for snorkeling. Also, that was where I found my first St. Vincent Wren, which when I first heard, I was like, what is that weird warbler thing? Because from a distance, if you don't hear the introductory notes, it sounds nothing like a wren.
It sounds like a wood warbler. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I've like, this was like one of the first things David told me about the trip. And I was like,
yeah,
I listened to it. It was like the weirdest thing in the world. It doesn't sound like a wren at all.
Yeah. And so because my two favorite families are the wrens and the wood warblers, like, it's kind of the perfect combination.
Yeah. That is your favorite bird now, right?
Yeah. Well, nightingale wren has been my favorite bird for a long time. That's going to be hard to dethrone, but it is definitely up there.
Yeah.
Because from a distance, like, it sounds just like a warbler. Once you get closer, you hear the introductory notes, and it's like, okay, I can hear the troglodytes influence there. But they're somewhat similar to St. Lucia wren in that they're like very white below.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, after I photographed the St. Vincent wren there, I went down to the beach to kind of scout out where I wanted to snorkel for the next day. And this guy came up, super friendly dude. His name was Kenny. And if you go to St. Vincent, you have to go here and talk to Kenny. Tell him David sent you. He was so friendly. He told me so many stories. He was like, oh yeah, I was here. But it was literally at the time, it was 20 years ago. Cause I think it's 2003 that first Pirates of the Caribbean was filmed. He's telling me stories. He's like, oh yeah, Johnny Depp was here. And I got to talk to him. He was drunk the whole time. Like literally the whole time he was filming, he was drunk.
That explains a lot for how he was walking. It works with the character.
Yeah, no, it absolutely does work with the character. But it turns out like some of the goofy walking that Jack Sparrow did may not have been acted. It may have been like legitimate. I guess it's what they call method acting or something, where you like literally get into the
character. Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
Wow.
But like, yeah, it's really cool because you can go out and snorkel right underneath that big rock where in the opening scene of Pirates, I watched the first Pirates of the Caribbean before going to kind of get in the mindset. But in the opening scene of the Pirates of the Caribbean, or the opening scene for Jack, he's coming in on the boat and there's like this big arched rock in the water that has skeletons hanging on it.
Yeah, it's pirates
like,
beware.
Yeah pirates be warned or something like that.
Yeah,
that rock is like you literally snorkel underneath that, which is really cool, and there's great fish there. But yeah, Kenny was such a G. I didn't bring fins with me just because they're very bulky. I brought my own mask and snorkel, but I didn't bring my fins. And he's like, he had fins there. I'm like, oh, like, could I like rent those from me? He's like, no, man, just take them. And so literally for 2 days, he let me take them. I tried to pay him. He's like, no. He's like, no. Because he's like, I found these. Like, these are the beaches, you know, fins. So he let me use the fins.
That's amazing.
Yeah, he's just a super, super fun guy. He was telling me all sorts of stories about the volcano eruption a few years ago.
I bet he has so many stories.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Honestly, I wish I could have talked to him for longer. Like, I could have spent a whole day just out there vibing with him.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Such a good guy.
Yeah.
But that's what it's about. That's what, for me, that is like, yes, traveling is about finding cool birds, cool animals, cool plants, and just then, experiencing that.
But then there's like the people that you meet along the way. Like,
yeah.
His story has to be like one of the most unique in the world.
Yeah.
You know,
and here's the cool thing is his brother lives in Atlanta, because he's telling me about that. He's like, yeah, my brother lives in Atlanta. He works in the airport. He's like, that's just a different life. He's like, that's not for me. My brother has money. He has a car, you know, he has a house, all that stuff. He's like, that's just not for me. He literally is living on a tree platform.
How does he survive?
Well, that's one of the cool things about the islands is like, it's not, you don't, for them, because this is one thing I learned from talking to Kenny specifically is for them there. Money, so this isn't true of all people there, but this is true of the population that lives like him. Because there is a subsection of the population on St. Vincent that like lives a somewhat westernized lifestyle. Mm-hmm. But for him and the large community of people that live like him, money is not a necessity.
So how do you get food?
He forages for fruit and stuff, and he's out there every day fishing. And that's he loves that lifestyle.
Man, honestly, that sounds kind of like a dream. You know?
I took some inspiration from that. Like, I think just given the culture that I've raised in, it would be a very, very shocking transition to live like that. But like, I did take some inspiration.
It's such a beautiful thing what this guy has done with his life.
Yeah. Like for me, he was the definition of living in the moment. And that's something that I try to like channel in my daily life since talking to him. But I think the more of Kenny that we can channel, the better.
I want to meet this guy.
Dude, yeah, go. He'll be there. I mean, because he's been there for decades.
Yeah, that's awesome. Wow, we took that's the biggest tangent on the podcast.
Yeah, but honestly, that is to me, all these experiences combined, I think is what makes this one of my favorite trips that I've ever done. Is because it is not just about the birds. It is not just about the cool animals and plants and scenery and stuff like that. It's like all these things wrapped up with the human experience as well. The cool biogeography, the amazing island endemism, wrapped up with these just really amazing cool experiences. Honestly, like life-changing conversations with these people.
This is this conversation is probably going to inspire a change in this upcoming year for me.
Yes, like, let's do it.
Well,
ideally, go in like February, March, April. That's generally when people go. I went during a very bad time of year for it.
That would be the perfect time for me to go.
Yeah, there you go. Because like, because February, March, April, that's the dry season. It's also before hurricane season. So I guess it's in the early part of hurricane season technically. So you're slightly less likely to get hit by that. Because I guess I don't think we're definitely not going to get to the other island. So I'll just kind of like fast forward and like, I had 3 canceled flights that had to spend the night and everything got delayed and everything got pushed back. And I ended up missing an entire island because of it. Even though I had planned 2 buffer days, and that 2 buffer days was not enough to factor in for the Caribbean travel. But yeah, this was at the end of the trip when all these cancellations happened. And so I was, at that point, I was just kind of like along for the ride, seeing what happened, having fun talking to people in the airport. Because oftentimes we were there for 8+ hours as they delayed. Because like the first time it happened, it delayed, and then they canceled. I was like, oh, okay, cool. The next time it happened, the first time they said delay, I was like, just please cancel it so that we don't have to spend 8 hours in the airport. And they never did. They waited till 10 p.m. every time to cancel.
Of course.
But you know, I was at the end of the trip. I had so much fun, so many amazing experiences that at that point I just kind of let it happen.
Yeah, I mean, this sounds like the trip of a lifetime.
Yeah, because all of that stuff happened after the Kenny talk, and it honestly made a difference.
Really?
Yeah, because Kenny was on St. Vincent. All the crazy stuff happened after St. Vincent, because Grenada was the next island I went to, and that's when everything started to fall apart. It was after Grenada.
So we have like maybe 2 minutes here. I know on Grenada, you got great experience with a dove, right?
Yeah, Grenada dove, which is a very it's an endangered species. They're similar to the white-breasted thrasher in Martinique. They're only on this tiny little jut of land on Grenada,
really?
On the south part of the island. They honestly, they're doing well down there. Like heard them as soon as I walked up to the Grenada dove location. There's like a little national park there. They're very much like white-tipped doves. Like if you're familiar with those in like Texas or Central America.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Can be a little bit skulky sometimes.
As can white-tipped, right?
Yep, exactly. Although with feeders, white-tipped doves can be easily photographed in South Texas when they come into the feeders. But if you're talking just walking through the forest, oftentimes your experiences, you see them flush up. Thankfully, I got lucky with the Grenada dove on my second day there and got pretty decent photos. Barbados, I didn't even plan to stay there. I had like a 3 or 4 hour layover that I was planning to go see them.
And
that
you got like
sufficient.
Yeah.
But it got canceled, so I ended up staying there. Second island record of, or I guess second Western Hemisphere record of house swift that we walked into at the hotel that the airport put me up into.
That's like a Southeastern Asian
bird? Yeah. Well, house swift can be European as well.
Oh, it can be?
Yeah, I think they're, or do I have that backwards? No, you're right. House swift is, because the conversation was whether it was house swift or whether it was little swift or there's another African swift that it was very similar to. But from what I understand, the Dutch swift experts confirmed for us that it was house swift.
That's we don't have time to dive into this.
That was a whole other thing.
But that is just stupid.
Yeah, just complete luck.
How?
How did that bird
get there?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm assuming it had like several stops along the way. I don't know if it came from the east or came from the west, but because I think either way it'd be an incredibly long distance flight.
That's
just one of those things where it's just you luck into something like that, because I would not have been at it was like the Hilton hotel that the airport put me up into.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, Yeah, it was great having you on, David. And yeah, maybe we'll talk again sometime. Once you're out of med school, we can talk about another trip that you go on.
Absolutely. So, yeah. It's great to be here. Glad to share. Hopefully somebody, at least one person, goes to the Lesser Antilles besides you, Luke, because of this, because it needs more attention from birders. So please,
birders, please go to the Lesser Antilles. It sounds phenomenal. Yeah. So yeah, this was Back to Birding with Luke and no Patrick, but with David Holly, his replacement for now.
No, I'm playing Patrick.
Yeah, David doesn't have the time for that.
That's fair.
All right. Well, we'll see y'all next week.